Back at it today with Sansway. Hi everyone, welcome to the podcast, welcome to the episode. So we are continuing in our How to Train Your Dragon trilogy series. This is episode 2 and part 2 production of our format. Just before we get into it, if you haven't, go check out the Sansway account on Instagram and follow that. This is where all the updates and notifications for the podcast will be posted. And there's a link to my RSS feed as well, which you probably already found that out if you're listening to this podcast. But if you haven't, the link is to my RSS feed is in my profile for Sansway on Instagram, as well as the Spotify link to the podcast as well. So without any further ado, let's get into it. So back in episode 1, we talked about the first part of our format story for How to Train Your Dragon 1, the first movie of the trilogy. And we basically just went over the story. We dove into like the overall plot and everything. We went through some details. We went through some scenes. We kind of just, again, in general, just explained the story. We went through our characters. Nothing too in-depth, we just went through the story. Today, we are going to go through the production of the film. And just before we get into that, a little more overview, I wanted to give a brief history about animation because I was recently doing some more research. I've been watching animation, just animation in general, for I don't even know how long. It's probably, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, I've been watching it because that's what, kids and younger, younger people programs have been directed to. That's how they've been produced, is in the animation style. But animation overall has been around for a long, long time. I actually didn't know how long, but it's been around for a long, long time. But a recent form of animation, and yes, I say recent because it was more like 30 years ago. So if you look at this in a certain context, 30 years is okay. It's decent. It sounds like a while, and 30 years is a long time ago, but it's not as long as, you know, other times or how long animation has been around in general. But this form of animation that I'm talking about is CGI animation. And most of you probably know that CGI stands for computer-generated imagery. And while I call it animation, there is a technicality I found out. CGI is technically digital animation. So I guess it is still a form of animation, but it's a technical, I don't know. I was researching it a lot, and there were some sources that told me that it was a form of animation. Some sources told me it was like a helper for animation. So I'm not completely sure. I'm just going to go with digital animation. That sounds about right because it's computer based. So after a brief session of head scratching and researching, I found that CGI is actually much, much older than I thought. I mean, this was much older. I thought CGI was early 2000s, probably the late 90s. That was my initial guess. Because I didn't know. I thought of video games first. And I think that's where it made its main, appearance. I could be wrong about that, but, that's what I thought. I thought CGI made its main appearance in video games, and it was the late 90s or, something, because the graphics were a lot smoother and, just the overall look of video games became a lot more clean, a lot more smooth, I think, during the late 90s. In some situations, that's just, again, me guessing. But so I have the history. I'm going to pull it up right here for us. So this is coming from the techadvocate.org, and I guess this article was written pretty recently, June 15th of 2023. It was updated. Okay. Well, I was looking at it before, so that's fun. But I found the origins of CGI CGI roots back to the 1950s, actually. This is crazy. I would never have thought it would have been that early. But back in the 1950s, when computer scientists and mathematicians began exploring the potential of digital graphics, at the time, computers were still in their infancy and the processing power was limited. However, researchers saw the potential to use computers to create and manipulate images. So this was directly off of the advocate.org. And it looks like the first CGI animation itself was produced in 1961. And it was like, okay, so when I read this first, I thought this was like the first overall, and it was like in a movie, or it was a clip or something, or it was like a whole movie or an episode of a show or something. I could have not been more wrong. It was just literally a short clip of a bouncing ball, I guess, which makes me feel a lot better that these were like the very early stages of CGI. So here were the origins so far. Now, when I mentioned 30 years ago for the recent form of animation of CGI, I was mainly talking about when it was used and when it was fully used. And that's when I had some head-scratching moments while researching. Because like I just said, for the bouncing ball, that was the first actual CGI animation back in 1961. It was actually a long while after, I guess another 30 years or so, until the first movie was fully done in CGI, was fully produced in CGI. And that was in 1995. For Toy Story, actually, when Toy Story was released in 1995. So 30 years after the like first attempt at CGI, making a short animation clip, we have our first full CGI-made movie. Now, going to applying it to How to Train Your Dragon, our first movie, I'm going to give the... I have the like the overall budget. I have some financial information here to look at. And this is coming from thenumbers.com. I was doing a little more just looking around at some other movies and some other shows. And this looks like a pretty good site. I mean, I've never looked up things on the numbers before. But again, this is thenumbers.com. And I guess it gives, you know, some financial information about movies, shows, I think media just in general, but this looks pretty good right here. So the domestic box office for How to Train Your Dragon was around $217 million that they pulled in. The international box office was $277 million. And then we have the worldwide box office, which was $494 million. With both of those combined. So it performed pretty well as a feature animation film back in 2010. Let me see if we've got... Okay, I'm looking at the production budget right here. That was the next thing I wanted to go to. Our budget was $165 million. And... Okay, that looks like... Okay, yeah, and then we have the opening weekend at about $43 million, almost $44 million, which was about 20% of the total gross from the movie. So that was some a little bit of financial information, just an overview. Okay, so after looking at the overall budget of the movie, I wanted to see now what was the average cost of CGI 3D animation during this time. And I actually found it looks like a pretty good site. I think it's called Statista. Gosh, I've had such trouble saying that word. So I have this site right here. I'm going to pull it up for us. And this actually shows a graph right here from 2008 through 2018 of the average production cost of CGI in movies. So back in 2008, the movie was actually being developed and in pre-production. So although How to Train Your Dragon had a release in 2010, the movie took around a year and a half to actually produce, animate, and make, all the voice actors, the recording, the dialogue, everything, the composing of the score, all of that, and much, much more. So it took around a year and a half to make, the release date of 2010. So we're going to kind of average these costs out. This is just a rough estimate right here. Back in 2008, it says it was around 45.5 million for these effects and for this type of animation. Now, there is a significant jump going into 2009 at 73 million, just a tad over 73 million, which, was kind of surprising going into just 2009, one year later. It had like a 25 million and up increase. That was kind of crazy. And then we go to 2010, which was the release. I don't know if there was any move. I don't know if there was any work actually still being done for animating wise, because this was March when it released. So probably not, but we're going to include this amount as well. It went to 78 million. So there was a little bit of increase there, around 5 million, but not nearly as much from 2008 to 2009. Like I said, about 25 million and up. And this was a decent amount. This was a decent amount of the budget then. You think, 165 million budget. This is not, included for full CGI or, full animation or paying the animators or anything like that. This is like the full thing. But this is a decent chunk. Now, I just want to put a disclaimer out there that this is just an estimate. This is just a rough estimate right here. I was doing, more research, and I couldn't find like the exact amount, or like, I guess, rough amount that they would spend. But just going off from statistics here, back from 2008 through 2010, you're looking at about 45 to 50 million, it looks like, to produce a full CGI movie like this. Okay, so right before, I have some scene examples set up for us. Right after, I went over the budget, and then I went over average cost. We looked at some statistics of the average cost of CGI during this time, during this period, right here from 2008 through 2010. But before I start with some scene examples, I want to note that the viewing, the actual viewing, is very important, what the resolution is set to. And I was actually thinking about this while I was researching, because it really depends on how the CGI is going to look. If you're watching it in 720p, which I guess even before I get into that, I don't know. I don't even know if you could watch it on that. I guess it just depends. Maybe like clips on YouTube, like actual movie clips on YouTube, maybe that would make a difference. But the viewing resolution is very important. And I wasn't able to exactly pinpoint the exact resolution in theaters, streaming and DVD. I believe it's, 720p through 4K, and that's just a rough estimate because that's our viewing scale right now. 720 is, I would say, decently average in today's scale. You're usually going to get videos in 1080p, but 720p through 4K is just our rough estimate, and that's kind of what we're viewing it through. And sure, if you view it in a certain aspect ratio or something particular, a possibly high resolution, it's going to look good. But I just wanted to see. So I actually watched these scenes. I think it was around 720 to 1080p, but I think for the most part it was 720p. I watched these clips on YouTube, and I just want to give some scene examples now. So I counted 8 action scenes, and we have, the beginning raid, dragon training, 1 through 3. There's 3 dragon training scenes, the successful flight, Astrid meeting Toothless for the first time, dragon killing day, and then the final battle at the nest. So these are, give or take, if you want to count all of the flying scenes, which would include additionally the romantic flight and the first encounter between Hiccup and Toothless. Staying actually to action scenes, there's eight. I mean, sure, there's, like I said, there's the flying scenes, and those could technically be counted as action, but I don't know. Flying and the actual action scenes are a little bit different. So that's why I counted eight. Okay, so when we start with the beginning raid and the dragon training scenes, they both looked fine. Both of these had moments of dragons, shooting fireballs. There were explosions, combat with the Vikings and everything, etc. It all looked good. It all looked fine. From the sparks, to the smoke and to all the rubble, everything looked fine. Everything looked good. There were no, weird cuts. There was no like bad fading. There was nothing like that. Everything was pretty clear to see, and you didn't have to strain your eyes at all. It was 100% fine, especially for the people watching it, for the first time or haven't watched it. I'm saying families watching it at the theaters then, or watching it on DVD, or people who just haven't watched this movie multiple times, like 5, 10 plus times. It was fine. There's no problem there. The successful flight was a masterpiece. The score definitely boosted it, just the scene in general, just because the score was so epic during this part. I mean, it was breathtaking. But just things like Hiccup's hair flowing while they're flying, which that actually looked really good. I wanted to look back at that because there were a couple times where I wasn't paying attention as much, and I wondered, oh, okay, are they actually going to be able to do this well? And put this in the scene well. But everything looked fine. That was good. And then, the rocks breaking off when Toothless is knocked into the rocks when they're flying, the rock pillars. And then even the clouds and the shadows being displayed on the surface of the sea, there was great detail there. The water and the waves were also fine. Sometimes I'm a little skeptical about water and seas, moving with these older animations. I say order in this type of context because this was 14 years ago compared to what we have now, roughly 14 years ago. But that looked fine. There was no nothing unusual in there, no problems or I guess like there was a constant flow. There was a constant flow of waves, so nothing was choppy, nothing was like weird, jagged or sharp looking. It was smooth and it was fine. Also, the landscape looked good, and even when Toothless and him are falling towards the ground, Toothless' wings, I guess, once they get closer, I don't know like the exact time in the scene, but when they're actually when they're gonna die soon, his wings kind of lock up, and I'm trying to figure out that word, but they're like locked in this certain position where planes are locked in. I don't know if they're called like the draft shafts or the shafts maybe, or something like that, but his wings were like plane wings where I don't like to kind of halt the plane, or they almost act as like brakes. Kind of, I wish I could figure out that word. I'm sorry for that. But that's kind of where that's as best as I can explain it. You can actually see, how fast they're going. And the wind rushing behind them because there's like these wispy clouds, and it makes sense. They're in an island up north and everything. This is kind of, the Scotland, England, Norway kind of European area up farther up north, Icelandic again. But you have these clouds up here, and they're wispy, and that's kind of what's allowing us to see the speed and how fast they're actually going. So I think that was great attention to detail, especially production-wise. And then my last applaud towards the end is when Hiccup throws away, the cheat sheet, and this is again the part where they're literally going to die. This is the last couple of seconds, last couple of milliseconds, while he's flying with Toothless. And then, they're going, the score picks up, they're dodging rock pillars left and right. Hiccup is literally switching gears. It's amazing. This is visually great. And again, the score is a huge boost to this. And of course, in general, I could go by frame by frame detail for everything in the movie production wise and looking more into the CGI, but everything looks fine. Like a normal person is not going to do that. Even, film enthusiasts and editors and everything, cinematic editors, like they understand. Normal people watching this, I understand paying attention to detail, but there's times where nobody is going to be looking at that. So, there is no impurities that I saw or fuzziness visible to the naked eye while you're watching it in normal speed. Thirdly, we have the similar to the successful flight. There's a little spurt of action when Astrid meets Toothless, and he takes Hiccup and her on that kind of barrel roll trip throughout the sky going into just right before we get into the romantic flight. And it's the same deal. Just like the successful flight, it was solid. Just like the actual, the flying and everything and the different shots and the angles of the camera. It was clean. It was fine. There was nothing wrong with it. Again, detail-wise, there was nothing wrong with it. Fourth, here we're at the final test, and there wasn't anything that came up. There were good visuals. The fire, the smoke, the fireballs from Toothless were all the same before. And again, the final test, this was actually in front of the congregation, in front of Stoic, and this is right before going towards the nest, going to the nest to fight the Red Death. But everything was fine here. The visuals were good. There were no changes and, no concern. Lastly, we get to the final battle. And again, like I just mentioned, the Red Death was by far the most action in the movie. This last, like, I think it was around 15 minutes, 12 to 15 minutes was probably our last action scene, our eighth action scene. The whole gang is together, all geared up with dragons. There's Vikings with, flaming catapults, shooting at the Alpha, shooting at the Red Death. The ships are there, but they eventually burn, and Hiccup and Toothless are taking down the Queen. That whole sequence was great. And here's the fun part. When they go to head with the Red Death, I mean, it's crazy. It's literally, it was crazy. Not only was the flying great, especially when going, straight up and taking a nosedive straight down, but the fire from the Red Death, and I actually saw this in a, I don't think it was an interview, but it was kind of a clip of the production process, the animation production process of this first movie, and how the directors were kind of concerned. Like I said, Chris Sanders, Dean DeBlois, excuse me, were concerned a little bit about how the CGI would turn out the fire, and it actually did very, very well. It was actually pretty insane, and again, this was 2010, and you've got all this crazy fire. It's streaming, black smoke. It's all thick and everything. There's billowing clouds. And it was very well done. And then we follow towards the end where they're shooting out the Alpha's wings to complete to complete the task. That was insane. I mean, good strategy on the writing part. But this, the rest of that scene was great production-wise. And I actually forgot that Toothless shot a fireball inside the Red Death and basically incinerated everything, all of like her innards. And that was just crazy to watch. But she crashes onto the beach and literally explodes. And that was, when you think about it more in depth, that was pretty dark when you see it. When I watched it over again, I was like, oh my gosh, I kind of forgot that happened. That was crazy. But yeah, that was all well done. The fire for that, the explosion. This was 100%, a mushroom cloud, and it actually looked like an actual mushroom cloud. There were no deformities in it or anything. And then right after Hiccup and Toothless, they get tangled up. Toothless' artificial wing is burning, and so they're getting tangled up, they're falling, and then they fall straight into the flames of that mushroom cloud. It was quite an ending. Now, moving on to why CGI. I wanted to know why they went with CGI for this movie. You know, when we think about 2010, the actual release, compared to Toy Story 1995 release, this was about 15 years. So it was still, it was even newer back then for full movies. But I couldn't really find any information for why the producers decided to go with CGI. All I found was how they made realistic advancements to their CGI in the third movie of the trilogy. There's a bunch of sources on that, but whenever I searched for the first movie, I wasn't really getting a lot. Going into my thoughts about it, honestly, I think it was because CGI wasn't necessarily new, you know, like I've said throughout the episode so far, but the first full movie, Toy Story, was made in 1995, and then How to Train Your Dragon was in pre-production in 2008 and released in 2010. I think just the way that technology was evolving and how the industry could have been changing, and that's why they chose to do it. They wanted to make more CGI films, whether it be in parts or just parts of the movie, or full films, full production of the movie in CGI. Maybe that's just what was changing. You know, plus, instead of traditional animation or, you know, 2D animation, I think that they knew they had a good story and they wanted to make a good film. I feel like there's nothing worse than having a good story and, you know, you're actually producing it, whether it's a movie or a TV show, and then it just completely bombs. It's just awful. And then you're so mad because, you know, it was a good story and it was a good idea and it could have worked, but it didn't due to the choice or just the style of animation that they went with, or I guess for live action too, how it was directed and so on. But that's different. But in this case, it worked. And I don't think it would have done as well if it was in 2D, because you probably can't have all the great shots that they planned for in this movie if it was in 2D. There's just something different about 3D animation and CGI that, yes, it is more complex, but you're just getting more, and it's more visually appealing, and it's just overall better. So we went through evolving animation, you know, giving a brief history about CGI, applied it to How to Train Your Dragon. We went through some scene examples, why CGI, why they chose to shoot it in CGI and produce it that way. Finally, I want to go for the expectations for the second movie, How to Train Your Dragon 2. And I guess another disclaimer, I know the second movie was released in 2014, so this is not new by any means. This movie is already 10 years old. And people listening now, or just in general, I know a lot of people have already seen it. But again, that's just how we're going through our trilogy series. But to close out episode 2, part 2 production, I want to take a brief look at the financial numbers for the second movie and what to expect for the production advancements for the second film. Now, I will tell you from my opinion, just because I've seen the second movie a bunch of times, I've probably seen it even more than this first How to Train Your Dragon, but I've got our financials here again, back at thenumbers.com. So here we have the theater performance, domestic box office, $177 million, international box office, $437 million. With a combined total worldwide box office of $614 million. And then we've also got our other stats, like opening weekend was just barely $50 million, and this was 27%. It was 27.9, so it's 28% of the total gross. And then this production budget was $145 million. So they actually went down a little bit, about $20 million in budget, which is surprising. And again, you know, the budget doesn't just cover production as we see for animation. This goes, again, for talent, for recording, for composing, and, you know, much, much more, like I said before. And mind you, there was a 4-year gap between the first and second film. So maybe for financial reasons and for the decrease in production budget, that may have been, you know, having something to do with it. In this four-year gap, a lot of time for advancements, a lot of time for general changes to the characters. CGI definitely got better and more advanced. The technology was more advanced, and maybe that's why as well. Maybe it was more expensive 4 years ago in 2010, and then, you know, 4 years later, the cost decreases a little bit because more movies are being made in CGI, and again, the technology is getting better, so the cost is going down. But this is a very fun one. This second movie is very fun. It's very good. I know some people, there's probably some hardcore fans out there that, you know, the first one is really it for them, and then they could either take or leave the second or third one. I think those are more of a small percentage, because I know a lot of people who like the second movie as well. But this is a fun one. This is really good. This second movie, super excited to just go over the second movie in general with you guys for our format, story, production, characters, and then score / soundtrack. So excited to go over this movie, because this one is probably my favorite one. Thanks, guys. I hope you enjoyed the content. Remember to follow or subscribe on whichever streaming or podcast platform you're listening on, whether it just be the RSS feed or the Spotify one as well. Again, go to Sandsway on Instagram to get all the updates and notifications and see more information about the podcast. I will see you in the next one.